Just give me a quick test, Eric.
Yes, okay. Mohamed Salah, probably the worst player in Liverpool history, certainly the most overrated.
The Punt Podcast, in association with the FWA.
Genuinely wants to spend the rest of his career at Tottenham Hotspur. I think he's mad.
I'm sorry, how can he escape Flash? It's unbelievable.
So this is an obvious snap. It's a team in great form at home against a team who just aren't that good.
I think he'll score some goals in League One in 17-10 any time. Deadly from set pieces and in the air.
Great, the boss is up for Manager of the Month. They've been phenomenal. They're odds against. Love it, love it, love it.
Subscribe to The Punt on iTunes, listen on Audio Boom, or look out for the link on Twitter or on William Hill's Facebook page.
Hello, everyone. A very warm welcome along to The Punt Podcast here with William Hill ahead of the final round of fixtures in the Premier League this season. Dave Kellner here. I'm about to be joined by Andy Excel and Derek McGovern to go through four of the games that, in inverted commas, could matter on the final day of the season. We'll also be joined by the chairman of the Football Writers Association, Paddy Barclay. We're going to speak about whether Manchester City are the best ever side in the Premier League, or if this is the worst ever Premier League season. And we'll hear from Paddy about managers as well, whether some managers are underrated, some are overrated, and whether or not Mark Hughes, who almost relegated two sides, deserves the plaudits he's been getting after almost ensuring Southampton survival. That's all to come on the podcast. We'll also talk playoff football in the company of Pete Farris, Gav Pushlowski and Al Ross. But first, as always on this podcast, we're going to talk Premier League football for the final time this season. It's a warm welcome to Andy Excel, who's sitting opposite me in the studio. Good morning to you, Andy.
In full technical glory, here I am.
How are you, sir?
Are
you
well? Thanks.
Derek, how are you?
Yes, great. Bubbling still after our winning match, just in case everyone listening missed it. But I think it was 42-1, wasn't it? And it had something that what we knew would happen. A winning treble when Kellner was away. Our chances automatically increased by 33% when that happened.
Those that took the over under 15 seconds for Derek to mention the winning treble have landed the under. Derek, I noticed that you're Nap selection was 11-10 in that winning treble. Lee Phelps even had a bigger winning selection at 17-10 going for Crystal Palace. And Andy, you pulled the rabbit out of the hat with West Brom winning at 15-2 last week. So the real plaudits, Derek, you shouldn't even be taking this sort of praise. It should be going to Andy.
Oh, I get a winner and still they can't. Haters gonna hate.
I walk with a hunch because I'm carrying them too.
You know what as well? And the real hero of this story, Derek, is Ronan from Twitter, who's a regular listener to the podcast and who's been having a tenner a week on the treble. He needs to go see his doctor immediately, for starters, Derek. And he actually said when he tweeted, Mo Salah's form is temporary, but Derek's class is permanent.
Good man. He must be laughing all the way to the food bank now after that season.
Talk about complete delusion, Derek, and Ronan definitely has it. Thank you, Ronan, for listening weekly. And we always land one of these, don't we, Derek, it seems?
Yes, we do. You've got to have patience with us. I mean, you only need one, don't you? One a season when you're getting 42-1 pokes. I mean, I think I mentioned this before. I went a whole season with nothing and then got to FA Cup semi-final day. This was on when I used to do my column in the Mirror. And it was a 222-1 acca.
Wow.
And it copped. I mean, that is just sensational. I mean, you can dine out on that forever, and I have done.
Was that 25 years ago or so, Derek?
No, it was like when Aston Villa beat Liverpool in the semi-final about five seasons ago. I've still got some of me winnings now.
Let's get stuck into this weekend then. Sunday, all these games kicking off at 3 p.m. in the Premier League. We're going to talk about those that could define the outcome of the top four and the relegation picture, perhaps. Liverpool versus Brighton is the first game we're looking at. Liverpool 1-5 to win this game. The draw 11-2. Brighton 16-1. I'll just pick out a couple of the enhancements here with William Hill that might be of interest. Mo Salah to score, Liverpool to win, and both teams to score was 3-1. That's been enhanced to 7-2. And if you think Glenn Murray is going to score and Brighton are going to win this game, 18-1 enhanced to 20-1. And that loss last weekend against Chelsea means that Liverpool still need 1 point to guarantee fourth spot. If Chelsea go to Newcastle and win and Liverpool lose, they will be denied that Champions League place, but might still seal one, Derek, by winning the final on the 26th of May. Mo Salah's form might be a slight concern for Liverpool fans going into that final, Derek. There's a chance he's feeling the effects of a long season, and he's barely missed a game this campaign, Derek. And to coin one of your favourite phrases, he's stunk the place out in recent weeks.
Yes, in recent months, I would suggest. What's happened with Salah is that he's been as bad as he's been all season, but he's not scoring goals now, so his crapness is being noticed more. When he was scoring goals, it was camouflaged. No longer, and I think he's been awful particularly awful for the last three games, but pretty much awful for the 3 months that preceded it. I mean, this game's a tough one to call because, I mean, you know, do Brighton do what they're supposed to do and play? You know, they could Watford seems to have done, down tools and start wearing flip flops. You know, with the emphasis on flops with them and also on tools. Or they could do what Palace did a few seasons ago and wreck Liverpool's hopes. Remember when he did that? Mm-hmm. With the emphasis on... I would suggest that a 0-0 draw here at 18-1. Now, I know you're going to be thinking, oh, come on, Brighton have got nothing at stake. But Liverpool only don't need to win this one, right? And I've got a feeling it'll be like a West Ham v Man United game on Thursday night. It'll be that kind of game because Liverpool don't need to score, they only need a draw. And they could hear that Chelsea are losing anyway at Newcastle, you know, 200 miles away or whatever it is, and even less reason to, you know, to strain every sinew. I just think it's going to be an after-you, Claude, event with nothing on it at all. And Liverpool aren't going to lose, let's put it that way. They haven't lost at home all season, so they're certainly not going to lose at home to Brighton, a Brighton team with nothing to play for. But it takes something to score goals in the Premier League, and when you don't have to, I refuse to back a team to win when they don't have to score.
18-1, the 0-0 draw for Derek. There's a stat that I love ahead of this game. This comes from Opta. Lewis Dunk has scored an own goal in both of his previous meetings against Liverpool for Brighton in that 6-1 defeat in the FA Cup back in February 2012 and in the reverse fixture this season, which Liverpool won comprehensively, beating Brighton 5-1. Hashtag your odds, Lewis Dunk to score an own goal in this match. Andy, that's what I'm looking for.
Well, you'll get it if you ask for it. You'll get it. They'll prize anything up. They're not worried. Talking about the game, I'm kind of on board with Derek, but not quite with the 0-0. I was looking at the draw as a decent price, 11-2. I think that's all right for the reasons Derek said. Really, they only need a point because the goal difference that much superior to Chelsea. They only need a point. I just think that if you look at Brighton, they've had a really good season, and I don't think they're going to want to end it in a bad way. So I think there'll be some effort, if not full max, but you're not going to get it from Liverpool either. So 11-2, the draw's good for me here.
Newcastle versus Chelsea next then. Another game that could determine that top four finish, perhaps. Newcastle 11-2 to win the game. The draw 3-1. Chelsea in the betting at 4-7. Enhanced odds, Chelsea to win both halves was 11-4. That's been enhanced to 7-2. And if you think Newcastle are going to win the game to nil, that was 15-2. That's been enhanced to 10-1. Chelsea now relying on Brighton winning at Anfield to have any chance of a top four finish. It would have been miraculous anyway for Chelsea to get in that top four, given how their season seemingly was petering out about a month ago, Andy. I thought Antonio Conte's team selection on Wednesday night was absolutely bizarre. You could say this is Captain Hindsight here, but come on, you leave your best player on the bench and your most informed striker in the most important game of the season, and they couldn't beat Huddersfield. Drew that game one apiece, and it might be, not me, but a more cynical man might suggest there was a whiff of conspiracy in the air, or perhaps Eden Hazard's future's been decided and Antonio Conte was making a statement. But whatever happened before that game, Hazard came on at the hour mark and he should have started that match, Andy.
I think it's probably Conte had been talking to Derek McGovern about Huddersfield, because I think it was more complacency than anything.
You think
so?
They just
thought they were awful. And they put Morata in thinking he's going to bag a couple of goals, get his confidence before the cup final, and it just didn't happen. My stat for this game is that in the last four games between these two teams in Newcastle, Newcastle have scored two or more goals.
Mm-hmm.
So that's 100 to 30, and that might not be a bad place to start, because, you know, they do when they're finishing their season at home, they do tend to play well, Newcastle. And I quite like them here. So if they're going to score more than two goals, then if they're going to get two or more goals, then 11 to 2 to win. Either of those, 11 to 2, I fancy Newcastle rather than Chelsea here at the prices.
Yeah, I agree with you. Newcastle 11 to 2 to win this game. They have lost their last four games in the league. They've got 41 points, and it could be suggested, David, they have down tools, but they were the better side against Spurs at the weekend, and they are unbeaten in their last four home Premier League games against Chelsea. Andy referenced that stat a few moments ago as well. And they've only conceded six goals in their last 10 Premier League home games as well. These prices are skewed heavily in Chelsea's favour, Derek, and that might not be correct.
Yeah, too heavily, because they've got something at stake and Newcastle haven't. But you have to say, come half-time in this game, they could get the news from Anfield that Liverpool are coasting, and then there's nothing at stake for them either. And do you want to be on them at 4-7 then, or 11-2 Newcastle? Two other things to remember, by the way, are, as Andy said, Newcastle, it is the last game of the season, and clubs are duty-bound to give their supporters something to cheer on the final day. Notably, two seasons ago, it wasn't a single away win on the final day in the Premier League.
That's
the season before that, there was only one. And the other thing to remember is Rafa Benitez, and he's managing his team against Chelsea, and the Chelsea fans give him unmerciless stick while he was there. So we would love to put one over on them. I just think that's 4-7 Chelsea. You're taking too much on trust there. The game could well, you know, the chance of Europe could well be gone by half time. And let's not forget that, you know, they still had a big chance of Europe when they played Huddersfield, and that seemed a less than committed performance to me. So yeah, I'm going for Newcastle here, 11-2. Far too big.
On to Southampton versus Manchester City. Southampton 15-2 to win this game. The draw 7-2. Manchester City 2-5. Enhancements, lots of them on the William Hill website and on the app. And this is hashtag your odds as well. So if you want your bet on the website or on the app and it's not already there, do tweet at William Hill using the hashtag your odds. A couple of enhancements to mention. Both teams to score in the first half was 3-1. That's been enhanced to 7-2. How about Manolo Gabbiadini to score and Southampton to win? That was 19-2. That's been enhanced to 10-1. He was the hero midweek with that solitary goal when they beat Swansea. And that has almost secured their survival. The lasting image, Derek, from that game against Swansea is Charlie Austin, for me, mouthing job done after the game. And my immediate thought was, wouldn't it be funny if somehow Swansea thumped Stoke and Man City destroyed Southampton on the final day of the season? But as things stand, Southampton 3 points ahead of Swansea, a 9-goal superior goal difference as well. Southampton look like they're home and host, but who's to say City won't go there and win by 4 or 5, Derek?
Can't see happening, can you? Final day. I mean, they need to win, City. They don't need to break the 100, you know, to reach 100 points and break records and so on. So they probably will win. And Southampton won't mind losing as long as it's only like 1-2 or 3-0. So, you know, it's probably going to be a 2-0 win for City. It's just an awful fight. If this is one of the games that matter, you want to know, it's just an awful final day of the season.
Must be the worst ever, Derek. The worst in living memory, anyway.
They should have just abolished the final day this season. I don't think anyone would complain. Maybe Swansea fans, but we could solve that by abolishing Swansea too. just remember, there is always one freak scoreline on the last day of the season. Remember 10 years ago, Middlesbrough put 8 past Manchester City. Can you believe that? 8 Middlesbrough against Man City. That was when the City players were thinking of their next margarita, and Sven, the boss, was thinking of his next margarita and his next Rita. a few years ago, Chelsea put 8 past Wigan. And last year, Hull 1, Tottenham 7. Three seasons ago, Stoke 6, Liverpool 1.
I remember
Stoke
that one.
Six. Yes, they're double. That's more than they scored the following two seasons combined. So there is always going to be a scoreline that you think, Jesus, how did that happen? But it won't be this game. It's going to be a 2-0 win for City, this one. In fact, we won't be talking about the game, but it is going to be a bizarre scoreline. Have a look at the Leicester-Tottenham game, I think it is. I've got a feeling that could be a bizarre scoreline. But this is Southampton 0, City 2.
Okay, you're very confident on that correct score there, Derek. You come up with that one very quickly. 2-0, City to win the game at 15-2. By the way, the prices for that Spurs-Leicester game, 100-30 on Spurs, the draw 5-1, Leicester in the betting at 8-1. I don't think I've ever heard Derek as confident about a correct score, Andy,
about
as that.
A tip.
So it might be 2-0 the other way. In this one. Anyway, that's Derek's thoughts on the game. As he mentioned, City looking to get to 100 points. First team ever to reach 100 points in an English top flight campaign. So they've got that. And they're looking to become the first team to record 32 wins in a season as well. So they've got records that they're still looking to break, I suppose, City.
Oh, and unbeknown to them, but most importantly, they're going for our informal manager of the year for their manager.
Yeah.
If you take the pre-season handicap market going into the last game of the season, Burnley are on 98 points and Man City on 97. So if you've had a bet in that market, you're still waiting on the outcome of this weekend.
Does it attract a lot of cash, that market? Is it one that interests the punters then, pre-season?
Yeah, oh yeah, it does. They always love it, and they always tend to fall for the mistake of backing the people at the zero handicap, and it very rarely obliges.
And it could cop this season.
But this might be one season where it does happen, and you know, it tells you how good both of those teams have been for those two to be in contention. But I think...
Because they're miles clear in the handicap, aren't they, Burnley and Man City?
14 points to the next ones.
Wow.
Which are Huddersfield, Watford and Brighton, all tied.
It's a good indicator, isn't it, Derek, of how teams have overachieved this season, or the teams that have overachieved this season, and Burnley shining like a beacon in those particular stakes.
Yeah, I'm trying to think who might be bottom. Southampton, perhaps? Would it be bottom?
Relegation zone, reading upwards. Southampton, Stoke, Everton. Just above that, Arsenal.
Arsenal, fourth bottom.
I forgot about Arsenal, yeah. Oh, that would have been great if they'd have been bottom. Can they still finish bottom?
No, they're on 68, 67 Everton, 66 Stoke, 64 Southampton.
Right, okay.
So...
Burnley, by the way, at home to Bournemouth. So if Burnley fans, who will have played them on the handicap, no doubt, know about this league table. Well, they will do if they're listening to this podcast. This league table, they will need 3 points in all likelihood to finish top of the handicap table, Andy.
Yeah, I think they will, because I think City will win this game.
Yeah.
And I saw one of the enhancements was for City to win and 4 or more goals in the game, which I think is probably all right as well. I think that was about a five to two shot.
That
might interest me if I was trying to get involved in the game. It's always a case with City, you're trying to find an angle to get involved. But I think there'll be goals and I think they'll win. So winning 4 or more at 5-2.
Very good. And we finish with Swansea versus Stoke. Swansea 10-11, odds on to win this game. The draw 11-4 with Stoke in the betting at 3-1. If you think Stoke are going to win to nil, that was 6-1. That's been enhanced to 5-2. Jordan Ayew to score and Swansea to win was 17-10. That's been enhanced to 7-4. Stoke are relegated, having not won since mid-January. And their relegation was confirmed before West Brom's, which is no mean feat. We've spoken on this podcast, Andy, numerous times about Stoke's inability to score this season, and that's ultimately the reason they've been relegated.
Yeah, and that applies to both teams, really. Neither of them can score. You know, you'd think in a game like this, where two teams that are going down are playing each other, you'd think ordinarily that players would be playing for their jobs, but they don't want the job. They want out, most of the players there. So I just don't think there's going to be, you know, unless Swansea go absolutely gung-ho for like 5 or 6 goals in a vain attempt to get something, I just can't. But they're not capable of doing that. So for me, the draw at 5-2, because neither team can score, it's going to be 0-0 or 1-1 all written all over it for me. So the draw at 5-2 has got to be where I'm going.
0-0, by the way, is 12-1. One apiece is in the betting at 13-2. Swansea picked up 17 points in their first nine matches under Carlos Carvalhal. In the last eight, they've picked up just three, Derek. Yeah. It's easy to have that new manager bounce. We see it each and every season in the Premier League when a team gets rid of their manager, but maintaining that is the real test of a manager's ability, and Carvalhal has failed on that score.
Yeah, I mean, if you ever... In subsequent seasons, people will say, well, yeah, you know, it is an example of a new manager bounce, and they will hold this out up for record because that's exactly what happened. And you suspected when he came in and he got those great results, you're thinking, this guy is either a genius or it's, you know, it's just a statistical blip, and it was definitely the latter. And they were useless the other night against Southampton, I thought. I mean, a real big game for them, and I watched them and thought, the Premier League one shot of this mob, they're just not good enough. And yeah, I can see Andy's reasoning on the draw here. What Stoke are criminally underpriced at 3-1, by the way. They've only won one game away all season when they had to win. They're already down now. Why would you even think of backing them in this one?
I think they're a good bet, Derek.
3-1, did you?
Yeah, I'm tempted to nap.
They've only won one all season, Dave. Why would you think of backing them when there's nothing? You're saying that the shackles would be off now, they can play with a bit of freedom.
Yeah, and I think Swansea will be so deflated after what happened the other night. They know they're nine goals inferior to Southampton. They will know in their heart of hearts that going into this final day of the season, they can't possibly survive. And I just expect Stoke to put in a performance final day of the season. I don't think Stoke have been terrible. It's just been that they've just not had the players. And I think Jerdan Shaqiri is going to be in that shop window for this summer transfer window coming up. I expect him to actually produce on the final day of the season because he knows that his future doesn't depend on it, but it's a good game for him to show some quality and then make a big money move in the summer.
Yeah, you could say that. He's been a bit, you know, he's got quality without question, but he's been disappointing.
Oh, very, very disappointing, you know? Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I'm with Andy on this one. I can see this finishing in a draw with absolutely nothing happening. I wouldn't be surprised if it was another 0-0.
Yeah, can I get a Big Mac, fries and a Diet Coke, please? So I've been coming in here for 40-odd weeks, I reckon, and I order the same thing every week. Big Mac, fries and Diet Coke. You've got to look after the figure, haven't you? They always forget one of the three. Every single week, they let me down with one of the three things. All of a sudden, this week, everything was perfect. Glorious Big Mac. Fries came in. And a Diet Coke with a straw. All three. And it was delicious as well. I think I'll keep coming back for another 40-odd weeks. Anyway, the treble won last week. Well done to Derek, Chelsea winning. Well done to myself, Palace winning. And big round of applause for Andy XL. 15-2, West Brom to beat Spurs. Al Ross as well. Crew and over 2.5 goals comes in at 3-1. Here are the standings, and to hide the embarrassment on the penultimate week, I'm not going to mention some of the figures. Derek is bottom, Gav second bottom, Pete third bottom, Andy, despite that big winner, is in mid-table, DK is sitting in third place, the Euro boys second, and Al Ross leads the table on £48.60 profit for the season. The Euro boys need an 8-1 winner and the loser for Al Ross. They've gone for a 12-1 winner, so really going for it here to win the Naps table. It's about as exciting as the final Premier League day.
What are the odds of back-to-back winning trebles on this Pump podcast, Andy? If you had to prize that with your trader's hat on. It'd be three figures, wouldn't it, I think?
No, 33.
33-1.
Can I just say there's one person in this room that did tip Swansea to go down this year? And that's me.
Well done.
Was that you?
Yeah. Back to the beginning of the season.
I will. I'll have to recap these. You know when we make the predictions at the beginning of the season, Derek, I always think it's wise just to sweep them under the rug when the end of the season rolls around. But I might have to listen to that opening day podcast.
Yeah, I'm trying to think. I've got no idea who I tipped. Yeah. I think it was City to win and Swansea to go down with Stoke and West Brom. I think I tipped.
I'll definitely listen to that podcast, Derek, and I'll recap it at some point. And I'll remind you of the bets that you put up on that podcast.
I think there were some comments about Burnley being relegated.
Were there really?
That, I think.
I will definitely sweep it under the carpet then. Derek, let's start with you. What's your winning nap to finish the Premier League season?
I'm going to have to go for a home team. Well, you know, Arsenal away from home from us. I know we'll win because Huddersfield have been on the booze all week, haven't they? So you know,
you almost use the P word there. You've done in this podcast already, Derek. You're fine.
No, but I knew you'd bleep that one out. So you can allow that bleep on that one. I'm looking at the fixtures here, and I find it very hard to pick anything. But I'll go for Newcastle 11-2 to beat Chelsea because I think Chelsea's interest will be zero come about 30 minutes in. Well, I don't think that because I'm tipping 0-0 in Liverpool game. But I mean, it should be if the odds are true, their interest should be over.
Yeah, I like that a lot. Newcastle at 11-2. They'd be on my radar as well. Andy, your bet?
I'm going to take the Swansea Stoke draw at 5-2.
11-4 now, actually.
11-4. There you go.
Value.
I've heard I was going to tip it.
Yeah, there you go. Newcastle 11-2, draw 11-4. I'm going to go with Stoke to win it. With Stoke now at 3-1. You're going the draw in that game. I'll go with Arsenal then because I think they're banker material, final game of the season away at Huddersfield for the reasons Derek's mentioned on this podcast. So Newcastle 11-2, the draw 11-4, Swansea versus Stoke, and Arsenal 8-13, 38-1 that final day treble. Andy, thank you for your company throughout the season on this podcast. Derek, you're going to stay with us. We're going to have a word with the chairman of the FWA, Paddy Barclay, in a few moments' time. Derek, you'll stay with us. Andy, thank you for your company. And listeners, can you afford not to back that treble at 38-1? That's the question.
Whoa! Alex Dunn here with the final nap of the European season. And us Euro boys, well, I say us Euro boys, it's mainly been Sam Norris for the last 3 months. And I've just seen the naps table. Dave Kellen has just shown me out in the office. It's disgusting. So we need a big price winner to win this thing. So I'm going to go for it. There's a game in Germany on Saturday that's really intriguing. It's the final day of the season, of course, in Germany. And Bayer Leverkusen take on Hannover. Leverkusen are in fifth coming into this. And they know that they could sneak into fourth and therefore the Champions League if they can better Hoffenheim's result. Red Bull Leipzig also in their pitching, but they need plenty to go right for them. Hoffenheim host Dortmund, Leverkusen host Hannover. Leverkusen know that a win would give them a really good chance of getting in the Champions League. So why not just go for Leverkusen? Oh, I know, wait a minute, because they're 2-9. It's an appalling price. It's a ridiculous price, cooked up because they're at the end of the season and that's what they need to do. But they've lost two of the last three now, Leverkusen. They're not finishing the season in good form. Hannover have nothing to play for. Yes, their away record is absolutely shoddy. They've not won on the road since October. But at 12-1, they are an insulting price. Their record at Leverkusen's appalling. I'm going against every single trend that I know here. They've only scored one goal in their past 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 visits to Leverkusen. One goal. But I think they're going to score a couple here. I think they're going to give Leverkusen something to think about. This is not going to be the walkover that Leverkusen want it to be. I'm putting Hannover up as the nap at 12-1 because I want to win this whole thing. But if you are feeling a little more sensible, Hannover plus 2 is 11-8. The nap, though, Hannover. You've got to be backing pro Hannover in this. It's just priced up wrong.
Now, as promised, we are joined by the chairman of the Football Writers Association. Paddy Barclay is on the line. First of all, a good morning to you, Paddy. How are you doing?
Very well, thank you, Dave. Despite a late night, and I do apologise to everyone for the hoarseness of my voice, but we were celebrating our Footballer of the Year and Women's Footballer of the Year for the first time. And it really was a lovely, lovely occasion. And I must say that the historic first winner of the Women's Award, Fran Kirby of Chelsea, and Also, Mohamed Salah just lit up the occasion with their personality, and also there was a very special contribution in his absence from Jurgen Klopp, which we can talk about as well.
Paddy, for regular listeners of this podcast, they will know Derek's thoughts on Mohamed Salah. Did you vote for Salah, Paddy?
Yes, I did, but I mean, it was the hardest. I mean, I don't know how many years I've been in the Football Writers Association, but, you know, I would think 30. And I don't remember ever having such difficulty in making my vote, simply because of the brilliance of Kevin De Bruyne. For Manchester City. No doubt we'll talk about Manchester City in more detail in a bit, but I just thought Kevin was just sensational, and yet I couldn't not vote for Mohamed Salah, because towards the end of the voting process, I think he edged ahead because of Liverpool's Champions League performance with him to the fore against Man City, and thereafter his just incredible demolition of Roma, and I think those performances probably swayed any people that were unsure, but it was a clear majority in the end, but a close majority, if that makes any sense, I think. You know, I feel now that we've probably made the right decision. But in many a year, Dave, and I don't know if Derek would agree with this, the guy who came second, who was Kevin, would have won easily. I mean, it just was that this year there were two, you know, really great performers slugging it out.
A very deserving winner after what he's done in the Premier League and Champions League this season. Only the very foolish would question that.
well, that makes a lot of Man City fans pretty, pretty foolish.
Paddy, David's getting at me there, because all season long I've been saying that Salah is massively overrated. I mean, I'm a Liverpool fan, and I think it's a disgrace that De Bruyne didn't win it. I think he was the best player in the country by a country mile, and me and Dave have had this argument for a million years. I've watched Salah closely, being a Liverpool fan.
Yeah.
And he's the performances he's been given in the last 3 weeks, which have been absolutely diabolical. They are roughly the performances he's been given for most of the season. But his uselessness has been disguised by the fact he's popping the ball in the net. The number of times I've heard commentators say, well, Salah's been quiet today, and then he'll score, and all of a sudden he's the Egyptian king again. I've watched the guy closely, and to me, he is the most clear one-season wonder I've ever seen in my life. He'll be another. Right. Clive Allen had the season like that in 1986-87, something like that. Disappeared from view the following season. The same will happen to Salah. I'm in a minority of one saying that. I'll probably be proven wrong, but one will ever change my mind.
Derek, I salute you for one thing. Having spent an entire career in a minority of one, we are brothers. I'm telling you, we are brothers.
I know. You know what? But I don't like it when people agree with me, because it makes me think I'm wrong.
That's brilliant. I do know the feeling, mate.
Let's move on for that and talk about Manchester City. There's a question of whether they are the best team in Premier League history. In a single season, Paddy, we know that Pep Guardiola will have to build a dynasty there, and they've got to prove themselves worthy of that title by winning title after title after title. But they've broken loads of records this season. If they beat Southampton on Sunday, they will be the first team to ever reach 100 points in a top-flight campaign. They could also become the first team to record 32 wins as well. Are this group of players the best you've seen, Paddy?
To borrow Derek's phrase and the concept of the one-season wonder, that will definitely, in my opinion, have to wait. Let's get one thing out of the way. The football has been utterly captivating. It has been a gift to us in England and Wales, to the wider world. You know, it just in the same way as the Barcelona that Pep Guardiola took over from Frank Rijkaard and arguably improved and made into one of the greatest teams I've ever seen. He is recreating that style of football in the Premier League. So, you know, let's not hear a word against them. But in terms of comparing them with great sides of in the Premier League sides of the past, and if we confine it, say, to the Premier League era, I do think they do have to follow it up and repeat it, and maybe even in European terms, slightly improve on it. But the team that I've been thinking about lately in this context that maybe not everybody would talk about would be the Chelsea that Jose Mourinho. He inherited some fantastic players, Lampard, Makaleli, and then improved on it by bringing in Cech and Drogba. And, Gudjonsson was a wonderful player in that team. And it's in 2004-05, that Chelsea team got nearly a century of points, 96, I think. They got more points than Arsenal had done the previous season in being invincible in the Premier League. Yeah. That was a very good side. And they did repeat it. They put together two titles before Jose experienced his, what rather harsh critics call his third season syndrome. So, I think we're going to have to get together, Dave. And I'm not trying to earn myself another chat with our people here on William Hill, but I do think we have to come back and discuss this again at some stage next season. But my strong suspicion is we will then be saying they have swept away all doubts as to their right to be considered one of the all-time greats, if not the all-time greats. I think they're the prettiest. That's one thing we have to just put out of the way. We can judge whether we like a wallpaper. We can judge whether we like a great house or a great city. And I think if you, no pun intended. And I think if you say which is the prettiest, then the most beautiful team that I can remember in the Premier League, without shadow of doubt, is Manchester City.
I think, Derek, I'm going to, I could guess your opinion on this subject, whether City are the best team we've seen in the Premier League or that this is the worst ever set of teams we've had in the Premier League, Derek. I can guess which side of the fence you're going to be on.
Is it that bad a Premier League season? Well, Everton are going to finish eighth. I rest my case. Watford haven't won for 11 years, but haven't flirted with relegation. Man United are finishing second, despite never flirting with attack. The Premier League has been a disgrace this season. But City have been sensational. Then again, they deserve to be, don't they? They've noticed two weaknesses in the summer, a fullback, and they spent $100 million to get two new ones. I mean, they used to get a dozen fullbacks for about $10.99 about 10 seasons ago. I mean, if they're not the best team, well, I would question why. Why aren't they the best team in the Premier League when they spent that kind of dough? So, you know, they probably are. They are invincibles.
I'm sorry to have to break this to you, but you're not in a minority of one today. I know it's an uncomfortable position for you, but I agree with you that the Premier League has been poor, poor, poor. The only people I would actually absolve from that were obviously Liverpool, who could end up this season as champions of Europe, but have not been consistent. They've been more consistent than they were last season, but they still haven't been as consistent as we would like them to be, viz. The recent non-performance against Stoke City. But, and I, you know, I yield to Derek for his greater knowledge of Liverpool in detail. The others I would definitely absolve from the criticism. Only in the last few weeks have Tottenham shaded off. I think they've performed well, much better than people say. But I think Pochettino's, the bar's been set too high. He's still performing well with Tottenham, given the change of stadium, you know, the feeling that they don't have quite the home advantage that they had at White Hart Lane. I think if you take all those factors into account, I think Tottenham have had not a bad season. Just because they're not playing well doesn't mean that they can't at least take something out of it, take some solace out of it.
Okay, so poor quality season all round as far as the majority of Premier League teams are concerned away from Manchester City. Let's talk about the managerial side of things. Do you think fans, Derek, are dictating to the club and the board too heavily nowadays? Because you look through, like, Sam Allardyce being hounded out of Everton by the fans, seemingly, despite doing exactly what the club employed him to do. David Moyes, he was brought in to keep West Ham up, but his future is up in the air. While Leicester City seem to leave it up to the players now. They got rid of Claudio Ranieri and Craig Shakespeare, and now they're not particularly enamoured with Claude Puel. And on the flip side of that, Mark Hughes almost got two clubs relegated this season, and he's probably going to get a long-term deal at Southampton. And after they went to Swansea and won midweek, he was raised up on the shoulders of these players. It seems kind of backward. The managerial merry-go-round is constantly in full swing in the Premier League, Derek, but some of these managers seem to be losing their jobs despite doing what they were employed to do.
Well, with Allardyce, I mean, you or I could have taken over Everton and taken them up to eighth in this league. I mean, they were never in any danger of going down, despite what they said when he took over. And he's not a manager you want in your team, is he? You know, the only time I've ever heard any fans of any club he's managed chanting his name, it was followed by the word out. Because he just plays awful football. Mark Hughes is an interesting one. You're right there. He could have taken two teams down. But Hughes, it's all image, and he talks a good game. He always talks like he's one player away from winning the Champions League, Mark Hughes. And I actually believe him sometimes. It baffles me how he continues to be Lord and how he continues to get, you know, decent posts, Mark Hughes. But the same with Allardyce, the same with David Moyes. These guys are dinosaurs. The day of the dinosaur is done. And they shouldn't be given house room in the Premier League, to be honest. And the fans are right, by the way. I would always go with the fans. When Roy Hodgson took over Liverpool, every Liverpool fan knew he was the wrong man for the job. The board didn't. They thought he was great. And look what happened there.
Paddy, your thoughts?
Yeah, interesting to bring up the subject of Roy Hodgson. The reason he was the anti-Dalglish. The reason he was on a hiding to nothing right from the start was that Dalglish wanted that job at that time. Dalglish then got that job, and he in turn got sacked. They then brought in Brendan Rodgers. You know, even at Liverpool, there's a lot of trial and error. And now everybody's saying everything's hunky-dory because the new Shankly has arrived. And by the way, I experienced the old Shankly, and this guy Klopp is, you know, up there with Shankly. He, in terms of his the force of character, the way he can link with the manager can go straight to the crowd, you know, bypassing the board, almost bypassing the players. It's an extraordinary phenomenon, and history is repeating itself at Liverpool. So stand by for a long, long era of success there. But I've completely forgotten the question. But Roy even... what, 5 years, 6 years on from his very unhappy experience at Liverpool, has done a quite magnificent job. I don't think anyone would deny that, with an admittedly half-decent squad at Crystal Palace, who should never have been near the bottom of the league. By the way, we've all forgotten Alan Pardew. If you talk about a perceived dinosaur, I'm sure if that's not a wee bit harsh, in the sense that, are we blaming them? You know, would you blame an electrician who comes into your house, rewires it, okay, but the light's no brighter than it was before? He's still a good electrician. I think they're just jobbing managers. My worry is that is only that they and the players are paid and therefore more is expected of them than they are. I mean, they can't all be fifth. They can't all be challenging for a Champions League place. Somebody's going to go down.
It seems to me, though, Paddy, that it's nowadays more about entertainment than it is about results.
Oh, yes, there's no question about that. The ownership, the increasingly plutocratic and multinational ownership has led to a desire for more beautiful football. That is true. People use the word Pulis as a synonym for mundanity, you know, when he really does know how to do the job, if the job is keeping your team in a healthy position in the richest league in the world. So, yeah, it is true that everybody wants to be Barcelona, and only Manchester City can be.
Paddy, I'll let you go now and nurse your sore head after a wonderful evening at the FWA Awards.
Another cup of tea might be in order. Apologies for my voice.
Derek, thank you for your company on this podcast.
Pleasure.
And we're going to finish off by hearing about the playoff football this weekend as well in the company of our usual array of guests. So thank you for listening to this podcast and enjoy the tips ahead of the playoff football this weekend.
Hi, my name's Pete Farries, and the Championship playoff games continue with Borough hosting Villa. At the time of recording, Borough 7-5, the draw 21-10, and Villa 21-10 as well. In terms of the last couple of meetings this season, they did meet in the League Cup, where Borough won 2-0 at Villa Park. Villa have won at the Riverside, and the other league game at Villa Park ended 0-0. One thing is sure from those results and from the styles of both teams, unders has to be a consideration here at 4-9. Now, in terms of goal scorers, Patrick Bamford has had an incredible period this season, but has not had too many goals recently. He's 11-8 anytime. If you're looking for a Borough goal scorer, may I suggest Adama Traore, who will be in the top flight of a European league with Borough or otherwise next season. He's 14-5. His pace and power is absolutely terrifying. For Villa, Lewis Graben has been really good since working under Steve Bruce. He is 21-10 anytime. But in terms of a result, I'm going the draw here. In fact, a score draw. Both teams to score in a draw is 16-5, but I think that both sides will cancel each other out. Their styles of play relatively similar, and ultimately their managers are at the very heart of it, pragmatists. So for me, it's a score draw, Borough against Villa. Whatever you're backing, very best of luck.
It's the first leg of the playoff semi-final in League One between Scunthorpe and Rotherham on Saturday, 12:30 kick-off. And Rotherham this season took 6 points out of six against Scunthorpe in the league. On that basis, I wouldn't have Scunthorpe as the favs at 6-4. It's an interesting day for Nicky Dawes, the new manager of Scunthorpe. He was a Rotherham player, and when he retired as a footballer, his first coaching job was at Rotherham United. He's up against his former club, but I think Rotherham, who picked up form towards the end of the season with 3 wins in their last 4 games, I think they're difficult to beat, Rotherham, and I'm going for the draw in this one at 21-10. Could be very tempted by Rotherham draw no bet at 21-20, but I think this has got draw written all over it. That's my play at 21-10. It's the second leg of the playoff semi-final, League One between Shrewsbury and Charlton, 5:15 kick-off on Sunday. And Shrewsbury 1-0 up after the first leg with a John Nolan late strike at the Valley put the Shrews in the lead. They are 7-5 to win at home to Charlton, who are 21-10. Charlton won at Shrewsbury in the league, as Shrewsbury won at Charlton in the league and also in the first leg of the playoffs. And here's an interesting thing between Shrewsbury and Charlton. Look at the late goals. We had a late goal to win the first leg in the playoffs at Charlton, and now we're looking at late goals again. Charlton won 2-0 at Shrewsbury, 0-0 with 15 to play. Charlton won 2-0. In fact, these teams have not scored a goal against each other in the first half in the last 3 games. So Shrewsbury against Charlton, have a look at under 1.5 goals. Have a look at it to be 0-0 at half-time. And my play in this one will be the draw at 21-10. And I think it could be 0-0.
Lincoln were promoted to this division on the back of some ridiculously good home form, and while 12 home wins in the regular season isn't great, it is their form at Sinsel Bank that has propelled them into the final playoff spot in the last few months. By contrast, Exeter were reliant on their away form for last season's playoff push, but even though that's deserted them this season, they finished fourth because, unlike last year, they have really clicked at home. I think this is where this semi-final will be won and lost. Home legs and away goals. Because Lincoln have been winning at home recently by outscoring sides. They only lost 1 of 18 at home, but those 18 have only yielded 5 clean sheets for them. Likewise, Exeter have only won 5 in 18 away, but they've only failed to score 3 times in that run. They met at Cinsale Bank just 6 weeks ago, these two. Lincoln 3, Exeter 2. A repeat would not surprise me. I fancy Exeter to qualify at 11-10, but I think they'll have to win at home to do it because Lincoln are so strong on their own patch. Both teams to score 19-20, over 2.5 goals 21-20, but my nap here is Lincoln to win this one and both teams to score at a whopping 16-5. The short version of the second playoff is that if Coventry are hoping to progress, the home leg will be key. No team has lost fewer home games than Notts County during the regular season, so the onus is on Coventry to get it done in the first leg at home, and I'm not sure that they will, and I'm not sure they won't either. Both of these sides have the habit of being pretty erratic. Forget the final day of the season for both of these sides. Coventry needed a point to make the playoffs against the Morecambe side, who needed a point for safety, 0-0. Unsurprising. Both teams to score and over 2.5 goals had landed in 9 of Coventry's previous 10. That included with Notts County. And there were 44 goals in those 10 games. 44. And what about Notts County? Goals for them too. Before the final game of the season, a goalless party atmosphere against Luton, both teams to score had landed in their previous 4, 15 goals in those. Only against automatically promoted Accrington and Wickham had both teams failed to score in Notts County games since February. So forget the outright, both teams to score 10-11, over 2.5 goals, odds against 11-10, over 3.5, 3-1, all great. But I'm going safer for the nap on this one, 10-11, both teams to score between Coventry and Notts County.
Thank you then to Gav, Pete and Al for their look at the playoffs in the Championship and Leagues 1 and 2 respectively. And this is the final podcast of the Premier League season, but don't panic, the punt will be back for a look at the FA Cup next weekend. To check out all the betting for this weekend, go to sports.williamhill.com or check us out on the app. And don't forget, you can get this podcast via audioboom.com by typing in the punt. And it is, of course, available at all your usual podcast places. I thank you for tuning in and listening. I do hope you've enjoyed it. And if you're having a bet on the final weekend of the Premier League season, the very best of luck.
William Hill is committed to responsible gambling. Visit gambleaware.co.uk for more information.